Mark Burke is the DA spokesperson on finance, and he's joining me now to talk all things budget ahead of the South African budget, which second time around is going to be tabled on the 12th of March. High level, what can we expect, and have the negotiations been heated?
Ranwan, good to be with you. I'm afraid as I'm not a member of cabinet, I'm not able to really speak about what's been discussed in cabinet, and even if I were a member, I still wouldn't be able to speak to about it because it's a confidential forum. But what I can tell you is that the DA has been quite firm in the proposals that we've put forward. We've basically asked for a six-point plan approach to getting past impasse, and those points don't really have too much to do with politics. I'm happy to go into them. But South Africans should rest assured that we are opposed to any more forms of taxes.
If you can take me slowly through them for the layperson.
First and most important point is that we've said no more taxes, but that would include value-added tax, personal income tax, corporate tax. And that's with the simple reason that South Africa and South Africans cannot afford any more taxation. People are already struggling to make it to the end of the month. And the idea that we would overburden them further, especially with value-added tax, is somewhat inconceivable to us. The second point is related to that. It's saying that we should capacitate SARS to collect revenue which is already due to SARS. They've indicated to us that with another 3.5 billion rand, which is a big amount but a relatively small line item in the scope of a 2 trillion rand budget, they are able to increase compliance, which in and of itself would lead to the 60 billion rand or more that would have been collected from an ANC 2% VAT increase. The third is we need to have an open economy. We need to deregulate and we need to concession our ports, our railways, and everything that allows our infrastructure to get bulk freight onto it and get our goods to ports and eventually to markets. It's now the case that mining houses and farmers are starting to think of the transport cost to the point where the goods have left South Africa as part of their cost, which is actually something that's not their core business and they shouldn't be focused on. Likewise, we need to have energy producers participate in the energy network and be compensated adequately for that, and a bunch of other reforms that are needed that will lead to an open economy. We need to focus on the efficiency of our spending. So the fourth thing that we are really adamant on is a spending review, which will be a three-month sprint to identify immediately things that could either be consolidated or amalgamated, and in many cases just cut straight out of the budget.
One of the big discussion points is the number of ministries in South Africa. Is that part of the cutting cycle that you are putting forward?
Well, let's perhaps quickly touch on part of the problem there within the ministries. You'll recall that we've got 32 ministers and 43 deputy ministers. And as part of that, the DA has 6 ministers and 6 deputy ministers. So you don't need to be a genius at mathematics to figure out where the rest have gone. It's not to the other smaller parties in the GNU. The lion's share of those reside with the ANC. So The executive should absolutely be trimmed. The amount of money that we're spending on this is excessive. I would add, and that's not to negate the importance of leading from the front and indicating to South Africans that, you know, the executive class doesn't need to be as bloated. I would add that, you know, the cost of the viable trims that you could make there, let's say you try to halve the ministers and cut a big chunk of the deputy ministers, would be somewhere between 30 to 50 million rand in compensation that's saved. But we are facing a multi-billion rand problem. So it's also just important to bear in mind where we're going wrong. And part of it is, yeah, and it's got to do with setting an example. But at the same time, we've got things like CETAs, which are these training authorities. They are corrupt, they're maladministered, they're the subject of multiple SIU investigations, and they cannot produce a clean audit. If we were able to amalgamate and then scrap those, that would add 19 billion rand back to the fiscus. I'm just mentioning two examples so we can contrast you know, but between what we're spending on a bloated executive.
Exactly. So you were saying 30 to 50 million, if you halve the ministers and halve the deputies, would be saved, right? But if we're looking at the CETAs and the amalgamation that you're referring to and cutting the wastage, we could save 19 billion. So those are the numbers that you're talking about, correct?
Correct. And that's just the CETAs. We've got the National Skills Fund, which is separate from NSFAS. It's an entity in much the same position as the CETAs. It's another 5 billion onto the fiscus. We've got a war effort in the DRC, which is costing us 1.6 billion around this year and 5 billion over the next 3 years. And nobody's been able to explain to me why we are there. And we've lost 13 or 14 soldiers now, and we've waved the white flag. That's a mission that should end immediately. Our soldiers should come home, and we should add those funds back to the fiscus. The reality is, if we're looking at a situation where we are this fiscally constrained, and then we have these ANC holy cows, which for some obscure reason cannot be slaughtered, then we have to start asking some serious questions. Now, these are only things, and the list can go on if you'd like, but these are only things that we've been able to come up with in the course of a week since the bombshell announcement of a potential 2% VAT increase. But there are capable folks at Treasury who could come up during a three-month sprint with a far more comprehensive list of things that could be consolidated.
Aggregate the number of
absolutely.
Cuts so that you can do in a week.
Our week-long assessment has yielded more than 30 billion rand in spending cuts. But we haven't then touched yet on things like the executive class in these nominal government departments. So you've got entities that have got, you know, 7 employees and 10 board directors, and those board directors are earning salaries. And it's multi-million rand annual salaries. So all I'm really saying is something that I expect definitely the Biz News audience would know, but I also would venture to say most of Africans know already, which is there's so much fat built into the system. The governance arrangement is so inefficient and there's so much wastage. We need to focus our energy there. And we also need to ask ourselves, why is there such a resistance to a politically neutral spending review?
And of course, that's the big question. So with the cuts that you have identified in just a week, totaling 30 billion rand, would we need to maintain the VAT rate? Thinking what we could do beyond 1 week of, as you say, an intensive three-month strategy on cutting the fat, surely we could even look to cutting the VAT rate and giving relief back to the South African consumer.
100%. So one thing to understand about VAT is it's a punitive measure by any description for two reasons. The first is, since it was introduced in the early 90s, it's never gone down. It's only gone up. And the second reason is that cumulative cost over time is almost generational. You know, so even if a family is earning 5,000 rand a month, you know, they're going to be looking at a 0.75%, which was the latest suggestion. They'll be looking at another 38 rand or so in a month, an extra expenditure of 400 rand a year. Now, on 5,000 rand a month, to lose 400 rand a year to the government is ludicrous. So to answer your question, 100%, if we do our job right, we can absolutely decrease personal income tax and VAT over time. Maybe to explain it to you this way, the Nelson Mandela government in 1995, if you take the amount that they had in their budget and you inflation adjust it to 2025 money, this budget that has now been proposed is 3 times bigger in 2025 money. But everybody would agree that the Nelson Mandela government got so much more done. Likewise, the Mbeki government had a budget that is half the size of the budget that's now being proposed. And during the Mbeki government, the social grants had already been incorporated into that budget. So we simply do not have a revenue problem yet. We've got an expenditure problem. We are deeply inefficient, and we should focus our energy there. And it's almost an ANC fallacy for us all to be speaking about where will the difference come from. The fact is, there's no difference. We are overspending, our procurement is inefficient, and we should focus our energy there.
Exactly as a company would do if they were not making enough revenue to justify their spending. So it's really a business 101 principle. You have made the statement that you are not in favor of any tax increase. Just give me your sense on this wealth tax that is being bandied about.
Yeah, it almost feels like a negotiating anchor to suggest something so ludicrous that everybody does know it will never work, so you can attain something else. The fact is, if you want a clear-cut recipe for capital flight, then you should impose a wealth tax, which will not bring you the revenue that you want, and it will result in a ton of money leaving the economy. So it's a radical idea. It has no viability, and we have very little tolerance to even talk about it.
We've heard very clearly where you, as the Democratic Alliance within the Government of National Unity, is placing priority, and that is on cutting expenditure. You've spoken about the $30 billion, I'm going to say it again, that you've identified that could immediately be cut, and just in terms of efficiency increases, and that's only after a week of work. What happens come the 12th of the March? Is there any chance that the minister is again pulled from the podium? I mean, how are we going to go down to the wire? As you said, you're not a cabinet member. You can't share what, you know, and even if you were, you couldn't share what is happening behind closed doors. But the reality is we need to know that the Government of National Unity is working. Round one demonstrated, yes, it is. What happens on round two?
Well, look, what we have seen is the ANC loves to weaponize time. So they will exercise a form of brinksmanship and they will push it down to the wire and see who will blink first. But the other reality is the DA is standing firmly on the side of South Africans. Across the board, people are telling us, thank you for standing up. Thank you for saying that we cannot afford more tax. Please keep fighting. And so that's what we'll do. That's what I'll do. That's what we'll make sure we achieve here, is that we stand up for South Africans. Now, everybody's working really well together as far as they can to come up with a budget that is workable on the 12th of March. But I would point out to South Africans that the budget speech is but the first step in the process. We need to pass a number of bills over the next few months that makes the changes envisaged in the budget speech. And even if none of that were to happen, which is now we're venturing into the hypothetical, but for people who aren't lawmakers, this might be helpful. There are mechanisms in place so that if a budget is not agreed on, then the government doesn't come to a complete standstill. So in the first 4 months after that event, no more than 45% of the previous year's budget could be spent, and thereafter no more than 10% a month. So government will continue to function, even if we weren't able to come to an agreement, but we are working to avoid that reality. The fact is we have to cooperate with each other. The other final fact, perhaps, we're talking about facts, is that the ANC needs to emotionally adjust to the reality of being a party that controls 159 seats out of 400 in parliament, which is 39% of the seats. That is a coalition territory, and that requires consultation and finding consensus amongst partners. And so unless they're able to do that, we will have to look at what the situation is over the coming weeks. But we are still hopeful that they will. We'll stand our ground in any event.
Well, we'll be watching with bated breath as the minister walks to the podium on the 12th of March. Mark Burke, thank you so much for making time to speak to me. Mark Burke is the DA spokesman on finance.